Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call of ADVA Optical Networking for the second quarter 2020 IFRS financial results. This call is being recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press the star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. I now hand over to Mr. Stefan Rettenberger, ADVA Optical Networking's Senior Vice President, Marketing and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, and welcome from my side. This earnings call builds on a presentation which is available for download in PDF format from our homepage under www.adva.com in the About Us/Investor section. If you not have the presentation in front of you may want to access it on the conference calls page in the financial results section of the investor section of our website. Before we will lead you through the presentation, as always, please be informed that this presentation contains forward-looking statements with words such as beliefs, anticipate, and expect to describe expected revenues, earnings, anticipated demand for networking solutions, internal estimates, and liquidity. These factors are discussed in greater detail in the risk and opportunity report section of our annual report 2019. Please also be reminded that we provide consolidated pro forma financial results in this presentation solely as supplemental financial information to help the financial community make meaningful comparisons of our operating results from one financial period to another. This pro forma information is not prepared in accordance with IFRS and should not be considered a substitute for historical information presented in accordance with IFRS. Pro forma operating income or loss is calculated prior to non-cash charges related to the stock compensation programs and amortization and impairment of goodwill and acquisition-related intangible assets. Non-recurring expenses related to restructuring measures are not included. Unless stated otherwise, all numbers are presented in euro. We will target to limit this conference call to 60 minutes. As usual, Brian will start and provide a business update and outlook, and then Uli will talk us through our Q2 2020 financials. Finally, we will have sufficient time for your questions, which we'll be happy to answer. Brian, please go ahead with the business update.
Thank you, Stefan. We move to slide four, please. Q2 2020 in review. The quarter that just ended was dominated by the global COVID-19 pandemic. The crisis has also left its mark on the telecommunications equipment suppliers. There can be no question that our industry has gained in terms of recognition and importance. Our technologies and services are vital to some of the world's most critical network infrastructures and have played an integral role in helping our global society to moving forward during this time of crisis. After reporting financial losses in the first quarter, our earnings in the second quarter were very positive. Our Q2 revenues reached euro 145 million, up nicely by 9.3% from the previous quarter and by 8.9% year-over-year from 132.2 million in Q2 2019. As we presented in our previous earnings call, the impact of COVID-19 on our supply chain caused a delay in Q1 order fulfillment. This impact continued in Q2 and increased from approximately euro 10 million in Q1 to a total of now approximately 15 million. We were not able to recognize the full revenue potential in Q2 and carry a healthy order backlog with us into Q3. Profitability and net debt improved significantly. The relatively strong revenue contribution from large network operators with comparatively low margins continued, but the cost improvement measures introduced last year made a positive impact and led to substantially higher profitability compared to Q1. From a technology perspective, demand was particularly strong for our optical networking equipment and services, as well as network synchronization technology. We continue to be very disciplined with our OPEX. In Q2, we saw, in addition to the normal quarterly seasonality, a positive impact from our cost reduction programs, which we had implemented in 2019, significantly lower travel expenses and a weaker U.S. dollar. On the other hand, factors like supply chain challenges and revenue delays increased our costs. Page number 5, an update on demand from our 3 main customer groups. Let me provide a quick overview on the dynamics of the 3 main customer groups that are driving our business. Carriers or communication service providers are our largest customer group, typically representing an average of 65%. Internet content providers, ICPs, are companies whose principal business is the creation and dissemination of digital content. Similar to Q1, we continued to see good order entry from the CSPs and the ICPs, which represent normally 10% of our business. Home office, the increased use of e-learning, video conferencing, and streaming services increased the consumption of digital content, and both providers of cloud services and communication services confirm a significantly higher network utilization. Their revenue contribution to our business is therefore trending higher. However, with CSPs in particular, it is being discussed whether the increased demand for bandwidth will also lead to higher revenues and higher CapEx budgets. If the CSPs do not increase their planned investment volumes, we might experience a slowdown in demand from select telcos in the second half of the year. We are also closely monitoring the development of our business with our third customer group, the large enterprises. This customer group has historically been contributing an average of 25% to our revenues. As expected, we have been seeing some softness in demand from this customer group, and their contribution has been trending lower. In the event of a long-lasting recession, which also affects the Fortune 500 companies, the expansion of these companies' IT infrastructure may be impacted. I want to emphasize, however, that while certain customer groups and regions may be doing better or worse during this pandemic, it is the diversity and the global nature of our customer base that provides resiliency to our business, especially in times of travel restrictions and lockdown, when society becomes increasingly dependent on digital infrastructures. Page number 6, supply chain update in times of COVID-19. At the beginning of the COVID-19 crisis, we were one of the first companies to point out that Wuhan, China is a center for optoelectronic components and that supply bottlenecks were to be expected due to curfews and plant closings. Since then, the situation has mostly normalized, both in Wuhan and in the rest of China. However, other regions of the world are still struggling with the effects of the pandemic. Every state-ordered lockdown and border closure in countries and regions that are part of our supply chain can cause bottlenecks in the procurement of components, production, transportation, and general logistics. Nevertheless, in the past weeks and months, we have impressively demonstrated the flexibility and agility in our supply chain. In addition, we took early measures to ensure business continuity in our global development and distribution centers, even under difficult conditions. The safety and health of our employees, partners, and customers have always been our top priority. Around 80% of our employees currently work from their home office. Only activities that require hands-on interaction with our technology, such as system testing and production, take place in our facilities. We continue working closely with our customers, asking them to place orders early and working hand-in-hand to prioritize orders and optimize deliveries for mission-critical networks. Page 7, innovation in times of COVID-19. As a telecommunications supplier, our technologies and services are supporting some of the world's most critical network infrastructures. Securing digital connectivity in times of social distancing and working from home has become a top priority. We continue to innovate and are aligned with what our customers need most. With our cloud access solutions, we enable CSPs to deliver software-defined, differentiated, and performance-assured wholesale, mobile backhaul, and business services. We saw a slowdown in demand since these technologies are also used by CSPs to serve smaller and medium enterprises. The acceptance of our new generation 100-gig aggregator devices, however, has been positive. As I already explained in our last call, many of our customers also operate with reduced levels of staff in their labs, so the testing and onboarding of innovative virtual solutions continues to be slow. With our network synchronization solutions, we provide accurate and scalable time and frequency synchronization for mobile network infrastructure, but also for other verticals such as utilities, media, distribution networks, financial services, distributed databases, and meteorology. The demand from CSP community for precise timing to achieve better spectrum utilization in mobile networks continues. Our expansion to new verticals looks promising. As you can see on the lower right-hand side of the slide, we brought new functionality to market, which will further strengthen the competitive edge of our network synchronization portfolio, especially the launch of the industry's first EPRC optical cesium atomic clock solution was an important milestone and breakthrough moment in the synchronization community. Last but not least, a few words about our biggest revenue generator, our cloud interconnect solutions. This optical networking portfolio delivers scalable bandwidth for access, metro, and long-haul networks. We provide high levels of open internetworking or interworking, programmability, and ease of use. Per my earlier comments, we have seen steady demand from some of our larger CSP and ICP customers, scaling their network and cloud capacity. The number of Terrafex customers is now greater than 15 and keeps growing. With that, let's move to my final slide, page number 8, recent wins and success stories. As I've been preaching to all ADVA employees over the last month, it is imperative that we win new footprint and new customers during the COVID-19 crisis. The risk of the recession has created an extreme focus within our teams to drive growth opportunities and win all projects we are working on. On this slide, we give a few examples of announced customer wins, which will help support growth. In addition, when considering the top 10 new customer projects for 2020, that we as the management board have set are imperative for further growth in 2021, we have already closed on 3 of these opportunities. Thus, it is my strong conviction that our competitive position has not suffered during the crisis. In fact, I believe that the challenges we have faced with home offices, DevOps working environments, and the introduction of new enterprise software have made ADVA stronger and relatively more competitive. We are winning all of our competitive bidding situations with the synchronization technology, and we are very strong in optical with some work to do in the packet space as we go up the stack and into the larger IP application space, step by step. With that, I hand over to Uli for the financial section. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian, and welcome everybody. As already communicated in the ad hoc release on July 16th, revenues in Q2 2020 amounted to 145 million euros and were up by 8.9% compared to Q2 2019. COVID-19 also impacted our Q2, and a substantial amount of customer orders were unable to be shipped. I will expand on that later in this presentation. The increase in revenues was driven by continued strong demand from major telecommunications service providers and the internet industry. Our pro forma gross profit contribution increased to 50.2 million euros, up from 46.5 million in the year ago quarter. Our pro forma operating income margin was at 7% of revenues, up from 3.3% in Q2 2019. We are pleased that our cost improvement measures introduced in 2019 achieved the desired effects. And as expected, we incurred lower travel and other expenses due to COVID-19, which also had a positive effect on the margin. Net income for the quarter was 7.6 million euros compared to 1.3 million in the year-ago quarter. Thus, we achieved a positive net income for the first half of 2020. Consequently, earnings per share increased from 3 to 15 cents year over year. Net debt improved from 68.1 million in Q2 2019 to 44.9 million and included IFRS 16 lease liabilities of 30.7 million compared to 36.2 million in Q2 2019. Next slide, please. Q2 revenues per region. Revenues in all regions developed positively. EMEA revenues increased by 8.2% year over year, now representing 53.2% of total revenues. Revenues in the Americas increased by 5%, and the region now contributes 37.7% to our global revenues. Asia Pacific revenues increased substantially by 34.2%. The contribution of telecommunication service providers in Asia Pacific was relatively high in the past quarter, resulting in a share of 9.1% of revenues for Q2. Next slide, please. Quarterly revenue and pro forma profitability. Demand developed well in the second quarter and revenues have reached 145 million euros, an improvement of 8.9% compared to the year ago quarter and up by 9.3% from 132.7 million euros compared to Q1 2020. Despite a stronger demand from carriers and ICP, we experienced a gross margin step up quarter over quarter resulting from a more favorable product mix. With positive 10.1 million or 7% of revenues, pro forma operating income improved from 4.3 million or 3.3% of revenues in Q2 2019 and also improved significantly when compared to the 1.7 million loss or negative 1.3% in the previous quarter. We have seen some analyst calculations on how COVID-19 may have impacted our financials for Q2 2020. For the purpose of full transparency, I would like to give some insight into how we calculate a normalized scenario without COVID-19 effects on the next slide. Q2 revenues were impacted by COVID-19 related supply chain constraints. On the one hand, we converted the customer orders of 10 million euros shifted from Q1 to Q2 into revenues. But on the other hand, we had to shift 15 million euros of customer orders into the next quarter. We estimate that our revenues would have been at 150 million euros in Q2. Shifted revenues from Q2 to Q3 have less favorable customer mix and product mix, resulting into higher gross margin for Q2. For that reason, Q3 margin could be adversely affected by these delayed shipments. COVID-19 related OPEX savings related mainly to lower discretionary spending of about 1.9 million euros. In total, we estimate a normalized pro forma operating income of 8.8 million euros or 5.9% of revenues for Q2 without any COVID-19 effects, which is 4.5 million euros or 2.6 percentage points above from the year-ago quarter. It is unclear how the ongoing pandemic will develop within the second half of 2020 and beyond, but it is very likely that it will further impact our business and financials. Realistically, this situation will be just part of the new normal, and we will have to decide to what extent we will disclose the COVID-19 impacts going forward. Turning to the balance sheet, slide 14, please. Q2 2020 credit metrics remained very strong with an equity ratio of 48%. Our gross leverage was at 1.1 and improved strongly compared to the 1.4 seen in Q1 2020. This indicates a solid investment grade profile. Liabilities to banks were 81.8 million and IFRS 16 lease liabilities were 30.7 million and make up our total financial debt of 112.5 million euros. Year-to-date ROSI was at 2.5%. Our cash position increased significantly from 52.8 million in Q1 2020 to 67.6 million in Q2. This is the result of a strong free cash flow generation of 23.4 million in Q2 2020. Our working capital improved from 134.2 million euros to 127.9 million and was 22% of revenues in Q2. Furthermore, we greatly strengthened our financial flexibility by concluding a KfW backup facility that could be utilized in the event of a COVID-19-driven crisis scenario. Turning to our quarterly operating cash flow development. Slide 15. As mentioned in the past, our operating cash flow is subject to a certain seasonality due to recurring events, in particular employee-related costs in Q1 and Q3. In Q2, operating cash flow was very strong with 37.8 million euros and improved by 72% year over year. This is mainly due to higher earnings and aforementioned working capital improvements. Next and final slide, please. The telecommunications equipment industry has been less affected by the crisis than many other industries. And as a matter of fact, our Q2 was very strong. We outperformed both the year-ago quarter and the consensus for Q2. For this reason, we pre-announced our key numbers with an ad hoc release on July 16th. However, due to the remaining uncertainties about the further course of the crisis and its potential impact on Atlas business, we are currently not in the position to update our yearly guidance for 2020. As a reminder, with our original guidance for the year before the COVID-19 pandemic, we had anticipated revenues to exceed 580 million euros and to achieve a pro forma operating income above 5% of revenues. Many things have changed in the meantime, but despite the above-mentioned uncertainties, we believe that we will continue to grow also in Q3 2020. Thank you for your participation. You all be safe. And with that, I hand over to the operator to open the Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now start our question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Your questions will be answered in the order they are received. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question we received is from Simon Scholz of First Berlin Equity Research. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got three of them. You mentioned that there's a debate going on as to whether growing demand for bandwidth will actually translate into growing investment by carriers later on this year. I was wondering if you could enlarge on that slightly. Secondly, I was wondering what the average, if you could comment on the average size of the TerraFlex orders you've received so far. And thirdly, you were talking about slow demand for virtual solutions, and you mentioned that's due to the fact that you've got fewer people in labs because of COVID. So does that mean that we should expect investment in that area to accelerate once COVID is over?
So I'll start, Uli, you follow, maybe on the precision on the average size of the TerraFlex, but I have an answer there as well. So growing demand bandwidth and to lead to growing investments. certain carriers have told us, no, we're not going to invest more than the original budget, yet we've got, let's say, demand in excess of what we originally thought, but it's project related. So that's not bad for us because we're working in the enterprise access and metro spaces where even where some of our big customers have said not more spending in the infrastructure, but all of these individual projects that are customer driven will be supported, ultimately it's good for us. So that's good news. If we're in a carrier with pure infrastructure and they're not going to increase their budget by the end of the year, and there are some of those, clearly if they've overordered in the first half, we're going to feel it some in the second half. My sense is, though, that there are also a number of CSPs or carriers that are going to overspend. So we've also heard from others where they say, you know what, we're going to power through this because it's important to differentiate and to supply our customers with the needs that they have right now. And so I'm going to group that together and say, we're still cautious. It's why we're telling you, you know, we don't know this 100%, but that's why the discussion and why I put it that way specifically is because it's looking better. And I'm hoping that, you know, people realize bandwidth's growing and it's an advantage for them to invest more as a whole. But I can't give you an exact answer presently. Too many customers, not all of them telling us what they're going to do, et cetera. But we have a good feeling for a second half. Average size of the Teraflex orders, they're all big, but they're not web scale. So what we're doing is we're bringing in Teraflex into DCI, into existing large customers, and we're driving business. And even a small order is big. It goes in, you know, into the hundreds of thousands and then into the millions pretty quickly. So nice size orders. I don't have the exact average size, and I don't know if Uli can pull that, but it starts already at a decent size when you have two Teraflex sitting at the end of a direct link. And the final answer to the slow demand for the virtual solutions is, remember, I just want to qualify what those are. One is it's Ensemble Connector, which is kind of the edge cloud opportunity that we have on a white box. We're the operating system, and we can host any application sitting out there on one single box in an enterprise site. We also have a distributed cell-side gateway, TIP program with Facebook and Telefonica and Vodafone, et cetera. And the third one is we have our Activator OS, which sits on top of a Broadcom white box for provider edge applications. So really three areas. All of them are slower than we'd want because they pushed off lab testing. We've lost 3-4 months. The question was, does it pick up quickly? Well, we hope that they get back on, bring in their lab people, test more quickly, and that we're able to pursue those opportunities aggressively. They're not going to really impact this year at this point. So we'll have slow rolling forward virtual solution contributions in 2020 and hope to scale that strongly or rapidly in 2021.
Okay, thanks very much. That's really helpful.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. And the next question is from Michael Junghans of Commerzbank AG. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. I have a couple of them left here. So the first question related to your selling and marketing expenses, what you showed here in Q2. It was down 18% year over year. Could you just give us a little bit more color here? What do you expect on your selling and marketing expenses here for the second half of the year first? This would be my first question.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I will take this one. So yeah, we experienced, as you can see, a large drop from Q1 into Q2 in selling and marketing. Of course, you know yourself, many events have been canceled, like the OFC, like the Mobile World Congress, you know, where we usually are very present. Many other marketing events have been canceled, but also, of course, travel. you know, I mean, sales usually incurs quite some travel costs. So this is what completely shut down essentially during the course of Q2. So we assume that our selling and marketing expenses will slightly increase going through Q3 and then maybe going almost, not quite, but almost or close to normal in Q4.
Okay, that means you expect, for instance, for Q3, you expect a sequential increase in this line again, in this expense line, right?
A sequential increase? No, I would not say a sequential. I mean, if it should be, we should still be, you know, if you look into a Q3 of 2019, we were in the 15.4 million-ish range, and I don't see us going back up to this number just yet. So we should be way below that one.
Okay. Thanks for this. Then coming to this slide number 13 here, maybe you can walk me through the slide number 13 again, because I have some issues with this slide here on the comments given on the right hand of the table here. First, the comment says your revenue in a non-COVID-19 world would have been 150 million in Q2. However, I remember that you had a revenue shift in Q1, so going from Q1 to Q2, so that guys that revenues would have been at around, would say, 135 million in Q2 here, if I adjust for this effect. And then the second remark, what is given here, would say that in a non-COVID-19 world, you would have had a lower gross margin here. So I would have guessed that in a non-COVID-19 world, you would have had actually a higher gross margin, because I would have guessed that your product mix with the private enterprise would have been higher. So because more people would still be worked non-remotely, and this means your product mix with the CSP and with the telecoms would have been lower in this case here in this point. So maybe you can tell me why I see the things a little bit more differently than you do.
Sure. So first of all, the 150 million. How do we get to the 150 million? It's essentially the 145 we actually realized in Q2 minus the 10 million that we shifted from Q1 into Q2. Plus the 15 million that we had to push out from Q2 into Q3. So this gives you the 150 million. So why is the margin profile different? So as you remember, our Q1 margin was fairly low, and this was due to the fact that the 10 million we had to push out from Q1 into Q2 had fairly high margin. You this a little bit interesting picture here. That's why the margin essentially would have been a little bit lower in Q2 based on the fact that we just had the luck that the orders that have been pushed out from Q1 into Q2 had a higher margin. Does that
okay, thank you.
Answer your question?
Yeah, that's the end of my question. Thank you. My last question so far would be on your provisions for personal expenses. I see in the documents you had booked so far in the 6 months around 10 million here so far. Could you tell us so for your current provisions, what is your budget here for the final year, and when will these provisions become cash outflow?
So usually what we do is, I mean, as you know, we have an internal plan and our employees get paid partially on personal goal achievement and partially on profitability. So usually we accrue 100% of these bonuses throughout the year, unless we really see that we deviate in either direction from our yearly goal. So usually we pay out these bonuses in Q1 and Q3. As you can see in our cash flow slide, this is the seasonality, and this is the employee-related costs that I mentioned here. So the bonus for 20.
Uli, I don't hear you anymore.
Okay, I can hear. Oh, I'm sorry.
Did everybody continue to hear Uli?
No, he's back.
Okay, so
So what did you guys hear? Sorry.
Please go back 2 sentences and start over.
All right, I will just start over again. So we have personal bonuses and company bonuses. So other employees get paid based on personal goal achievement as well as company performance. So we accrue usually 100% of these bonuses throughout the year, and we pay them either in Q1 or in Q3 of the year. This is, if you look at our cash flow slide, this is mainly what drives the seasonality of the cash flow, is that we pay out these bonuses twice a year. Did this answer your question?
Yeah, it answers the question so far. Yeah, so it's good. Good to know this. So my last question so far would be: I'm not so sure whether you are a little bit too cautious here, with regards to your to the growth potential what you could achieve here. So I mean, I understand that there's a debate at the moment going on whether the carriers would have pulled forward demand to extend the bandwidth forward into the first half of the year. However, looking at your growth that you achieved so far in 6 months' time, you know, around 6 to 7% growth year over year, and you don't expect you kind of so far give us a guidance at the moment for the year, because on the one hand you see a slowdown in demand, at least what you write in your documents, and on the other hand you expect a quite solid still growth for Q3. So I'm still a little bit want to know which kind of direction now I should take, because actually I would say you would say probably achieve the original scenario, what you originally guided for, around 580 million sales, whereas I would probably guess that you would not reach the gross margin or like the pro forma EBIT margin what you originally was targeted for. So maybe to put a little bit more color here about why you cannot give us, I would say, a straightforward answer, for instance, to say, okay, we're going to be actually, this would imply that you would have had to experience significant shortfall in demand in Q4, right? So a little bit to know why you cannot just say, okay, we can, for instance, achieve this and that growth figure for the second half of the year. This would be helpful.
So I guess high level, what we said is we're going to grow. We feel very comfortable to grow in Q3 again. What we said, though, we have no guidance. And because the range would be very, very large in Q4. We've got to book orders in Q3 and in partly in Q4 to fill the pipeline for Q4. And because there's, the Great Recession's hitting us in various different countries, we're conservative. I mean, we're feeling better. But we're conservative and we really have to see those orders flow, because we don't want to be, you know, guiding you down a path that says this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do, and then not deliver on it. I think our goal is to deliver on what we're committing. We're committing quarter for quarter. And yes, Q4 is open and we can't really say more. I mean, we could give you a 20 or 30 million range maybe. That doesn't help you either. So I think the issue is, we'll know more as this quarter progresses, feel comfortable with the business, we're winning new customer opportunities, we're moving along effectively in the work from home concept, we haven't lost much efficiency. So there are many good things, but there's a lot of questions out there on the market. And we tried to balance that by letting you know what those questions were. Enterprises, yes, recessionary tendency to then reduce budgets, also in the running year. CSPs, you know, if they overspent in the first half, do they then, you know, balance that in the second half? We see, again, what we said is a number of them are saying customer-specific projects still moving forward, excellent. We're having some of them saying, you know what, I have to invest anyway, I'm going over. And we have some that are saying, I don't have the budget, I can't invest. And now how that plays out is a very complex model. So I didn't help you at all, but I just want to reiterate, it is difficult times, and therefore I think your question is valid. Very valid, good question, yet we have to stick to our guns and say we're not forecasting or guiding for 2020.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for that.
Maybe top of what Brian just said, we still also have the uncertainty in terms of the supply chain, or the challenges with the supply chain. this won't go away anytime soon also. So you don't only have the question mark regarding the demand, you also have the supply chain issue, and they are really tough to judge.
Okay, thank you, Sasha.
The next question received is from Johannes Ries of Arthus Capital. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, guys. Maybe some short follow-on questions. First, you said the order backlog is good. Can you feel us maybe how good it is? Maybe is it higher than last year even? How much order backlog covers a quarter? I think it's more only for Q3, if I got it right. Only to have a feeling about the short-term visibility you have.
So, Uli, I'll start. Maybe you follow. And that is order backlog is good. It's better than last year. It's been solid for a number of quarters now because we had very strong bookings in Q4, very strong bookings in Q1, and evolving bookings or, you know, steady bookings in Q2. So that has, you know, helped us build very strong backlog. The percentage of a normal quarter going in is usually 50-50 kind of thing. We are above that, but we don't give that transparency each and every quarter. So I'd like to say, you know, our order backlog is good for Q3, and we have some order backlog already for Q4, but we need to book orders clearly in Q3 to fill end of Q3 and into Q4 numbers. And so it's solid, but we can't give more transparency than that.
Okay. Maybe another question regarding the mix of your, you said you had a positive product mix, partly because of products which moved from Q1 to Q2. But how is the software and service part of your business developed? The virtualization, which had been a driver we expected, is maybe pushed out to next year. But how it developed, and do you still think in the foreseeable future to achieve the target of 20% there?
We've exceeded 20%.
You exceeded,
software,
okay.
We've exceeded now. Services are strong. Software is steady. So we had good software growth last year, but it's now steady. And that's part of the reason is the virtualization strategy hasn't yielded results yet. But we're in the 7-8% range in software, and we're in the 13-14% range in services, in that kind of a range, because it does move at, let's say, a CEO level kind of frame, but we have exceeded the 20%, and now I'm starting to look at, do I start driving for 25% for software and services? And I think fundamentally probably in 2021 that will be the next goal setting done to continue to increase that, and we do have the potential to do that.
Another question on the ISP business. How much maybe you had a new Cloud Connect product out, and you hope maybe to win back some shares at the ISPs. Had it been be the case, part of your success in the second and quarters there, or how is maybe your proceed at the ISP with your products there?
I think, you know, an ISP represents a huge opportunity for an ADFA. You would see that in our numbers much differently if we were to have a massive win. We continue to win little projects here and there. We're in discussion with 4 of the 5 big ICPs on various projects. We have some very interesting products, and we continue to evolve that story. But, it's trending up. But it's not a stepping stone right now. There's no opportunity to drive, you know, all of a sudden a massive amount of upside in revenues. But again, all of our planning has never included that. So our growth last year didn't include that. Our growth forecast this year, the beginning, hadn't included that. That's not part of our model, but we are working on that. And we hope to be successful step by step. The world's changing, new models are coming, and I think ADFA has some cool competitive products to be able to address those opportunities. Some of the opportunities, though, with the new network architecture drives less spend, let's say, in muxponders and transponders and more to optical modules, as an example. So there's a lot of moving parts. Important target market for us. You know, 10%, and it's been, as we made clear in our presentation, a strength, an area of strength during COVID-19.
So for first opportunities going forward, but hard to predict and hard to, yes, to guide on.
Exactly. They're very fast moving, very technically driven, very fast moving. They are very strategic, lots of moving parts, and there's all sorts of, parts to that equation. And again, we do business with three of them regularly, a fourth one a little bit here and a little bit there, and we're working on more with all of them.
Okay. Another question on your enterprise business. How much, a lot of enterprises have also moved to home offices, and so I was a little bit surprised that you don't saw a positive development, and even what you're saying, maybe refute and delayed in investments in the IT environment surprised me a little bit. So for, are you not benefiting if the people maybe move to the home office? Some others like Bechtler or so had really booming business because they sold a lot of equipment, but you saw it more at CSPs and less in the private, and I'm a little bit surprised that you have so many banks in your private enterprise, and therefore it's at a disadvantage going forward that maybe banks could also come under more pressure. So for how you see the enterprise maybe in a 2 years view?
So first of all, small, medium-sized enterprises definitely suffer. Large enterprises definitely in normal, connectivity, they actually started to spend more money. And so the CSPs, the carriers that sell that to them, they suffered on the small, medium-sized, but actually had some benefit on the big guys. That's why they have some customer-specific projects that we're benefiting from.
Okay.
Yet we sell into the DCI space, and there were some large enterprises that actually had to restrict spending. So, you know, our biggest application in those big enterprises is DCI connectivity. And that doesn't benefit that much from, let's say, home office. But, you know, growing bandwidth, yes. Over time, they'll spend there as well, and it helps us. So my view is, I think enterprise as a whole, small, medium-sized, suffered some. Big enterprise, they actually spent more in some connectivity areas, but not necessarily in some of the areas that we work with them on, their longer-term IT infrastructure projects. I see enterprise being strong over the next 2 years because they've all understood that it's all about IT and it's all about, you know, the right software and information at your fingertips and the ability to move people at will, mobility, and all the things that we can enable by investing in the right IT infrastructure. So whether you go cloud, whether you build out your DCI infrastructure, those are things that we can benefit from. And therefore, I feel positive in the two-year area. In the short term, we're still looking and trying to understand how does it balance out? Again, many moving data points. So far, so good, if you look at the big picture, but we're trying to be as transparent as possible and kind of helping you to map where our strengths and weaknesses are.
Very clear, but you are winner also in the midterm, at least of the maybe push to digitalization. Maybe on your own business, 2 points. I ended a call with Philips just before, and they said, like many companies told me in the last weeks, we will partly stay with home offices, and we will not travel as much as we have done before. We can done a lot of on the virtual side. Therefore, part of your cost savings maybe you have seen during the crisis, could they stay for a longer term? And you maybe need less office space and things like this that other companies told me too.
We'll definitely save in travel, definitely. In facilities, we're looking at that very closely. I don't want to, you know, our view is we're now going out to all our people and asking them very personal questions about work from home and efficiency and stuff. We've looked at lines of code and bugs. We're really good. But, you know, if you don't have people in a room driving whiteboard discussions, innovation discussions, going to lunch afterwards, and the aha effect, or in a conversation, the three of them after that, said they come up with that innovative spark or idea. You lose that. And therefore, we're not at a point where we're saying, you know what, everything work from home, whatever. We are an innovation company. We need radically good, intelligent people with good ideas, and we want to make the environment most efficient for that. Therefore, I think some of these companies are making mistakes by going down the path, oh, look, productivity is just as good now for 3 months, sure, but people aren't burnt out. They put their headphones on, don't listen to their kids or their wives or whatever else, and make it work, so their husbands, and make it work. But longer term, we have to look at reality of that. The second thing is, you know, we're benefiting from relationships we've built over 10, 20 years, and ADFA has long-term employees. That means we can benefit a lot from customer relationships, interpersonal relationships within ADVA, managers' relationships. You know, those need to be personal. So again, there, we're not all going wild and saying we're going to cut half our facilities costs. What we say right now, yes, we will lower costs. I'll commit to that because I think we can do less internal travel. We can manage our travel expenses effectively and save millions. And in facilities, we might come back with a saving millions policy as well, but there are reasons for people working together. And remember after 9/11, how nobody traveled for some period of time, and then a year later or 2 years later, it went back pretty quickly. There are advantages for the competitor that's sitting across the table from the customer to win that next phase of the business versus the person who's sitting at home with his books being shown live in the background. There is a difference. So long answer, we're looking at it closely, we're going to optimize it, we're going to drive change in ADVA, but we're going to do it intelligently with all the data, all the feedback from our employees, customers, suppliers, et cetera.
Really, last question now, more on the direction of Uli. People expect, or maybe more of my analysts expecting a weak dollar. Maybe this could be a trend. How much this is positive for you? I think you still buy more in dollars than your sales are in dollar. Is that right? So for a weak dollar would be good for you, or is it wrong?
That, no, this is still correct. We buy about 90% of our components in US dollar, and our purchasing volume still exceeds the revenues in US dollar. So yes, a weak US dollar will definitely benefit us. Remember last year we got hit by the strong US dollar, and this year hopefully, well, we will see. We should benefit from it in any case.
Okay, thanks. That had been all my question. Good luck and stay healthy. Stay healthy.
Thank you, Johannes.
The next question we received is from Tim Savagol of Northland Capital Markets. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi. I'm glad I was able to make it on. A couple of questions, one on the kind of market and competitive environment and one more on the numbers. First, Brian, I was interested in your comment about new opportunities being less oriented around transponders and muxes and more on optical modules. I assume that's a reference to 400ZR and cloud guys in particular, maybe looking to adopt that sooner rather than later. I wonder if I could, you know, confirm that and maybe get you to expand on, you know, pluggables in general, coherent pluggables in the cloud and how you see that developing. And then semi-related to that, what you're seeing in terms of competition for the TeraFlex from 800 gig technologies. We've seen a couple of relatively high profile trial announcements recently, probably more in the carrier space. So that second part of the question, I'd ask you to expand your commentary beyond cloud into carrier with regard to what you're seeing competitively from 800 gig solutions. And I'll follow up, thanks.
So the first one, I mentioned the pluggables, not because people are going full bore into that, but it's because it's part of the look at architectural change and how they're going to drive networks. And yes, I think the bigger you are, the more likely you could do that kind of a networking infrastructure and manage it all effectively. Smaller guys, it makes less sense. They want one throat to choke, et cetera. So first of all, that's going to play a role. But what I was saying was the complexity of the decisions and the timing it's taking to make bigger decisions out there, and the evolving network. So clearly we understand that you could have a proprietary end-to-end solution. You could have an OLS with a transponder shelf and muxponder shelf, or you could have an OLS with pluggables or some combination of there. And so as people go down the path of making decisions, I think this is a lot in flux. Different people are making different decisions. And Tim, I don't want to lead you down the path one or the other. I think there's a healthy mix of optionality there, and people are going to make the decisions based on architectural cost, ease of installation, service infrastructure, how their DCI, infrastructure set up, all sorts of things. I can't answer that question easily straight out to you, but it's one of a few different solutions. I don't see the market shifting heavily, dramatically, and quickly. So I do also see it as an enabler for an ADFA in certain application spaces. Second one is the TerraFlex. We have our own 800 gig solution. So we've got and had 600 gig for what, better part of a year now. 800 gig we are now starting to offer, and we will even have single channel 800 gig, 140 gigabaud solutions coming down the pipeline, most likely by Q2 of next year. So we don't see, again, I told you last time, there's a lot of marketing out there, but there's a lot more to it, a lot more complexity in these decision makings. And there are a lot of other things that are actually as important as the decision 400, 600, 800, subcarriers, single channel, dual channel, all sorts of, or super channels. It's a little bit more complex than that. So I'll summarize. We do not see that impacting our business at all. We see us actually being able to one-up them very quickly from a technology perspective and be very competitive with the solutions out there. And I think it's not fundamentally changing the game like many years ago where Ciena was out there a year ahead in that step up to, and their step up, that's not there anymore. So there'll be a lot of people that are competing and are going to be competing on a lot of things besides the bandwidth war or the marketing war on 400, 600, 800, 1.2 terabit. I hope that was, the answer that you were looking for. Thank you.
Not looking for anything in particular, just your perspective, and that was very helpful. Back onto the numbers. I just want to clarify, I guess, Uli commented and then you followed up about expectations for growth. It sounds like that comment was about Q3. I'm not sure if that's sequential or year on year, but actually the compares are about the same. But any further color on that would be appreciated. And then kind of along with that, looking at the Q2 results in particular, seems like you had some particular strength in Europe. I wonder if you could, it seems like these carrier dynamics around increased traffic are worldwide, but is there anything in particular happening in Europe outside of the fact that a lot of your installed base is there that's driving strength?
Brian, do you want to start with the telco question?
What I heard was the Q3 growth and the Europe thing. You can go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, as you said, Tim, it's sequentially and previous year is pretty much the same. So, yeah, we anticipate we will grow year over year and sequentially. How much has to be seen? Again, it all depends on how sustainable the supply chain will be, and if we will be able to close some of these orders that Brian was talking about, but we are confident that we will grow.
From a European perspective, yes, we see Europe has been doing well for us. You saw Asia Pac some growth there, but in general, if you look at order flows, Europe's doing well for us. You know, back a few months ago, people were saying it's U.S. and big orders coming from large carriers out of the U.S. I think our experience has been that Europe has been very steady as it goes throughout the pandemic. So feel comfortable and confident that Europe can continue moving forward. Now, I don't know if it's our competitive edge or if there's competitive shifts going on or Europeanized decision-making or what the reason is, but we feel comfortable in Europe, with Europe, I should say.
Okay, if I can just squeeze one more in quickly, just on the gross margin side, and you mentioned this, but is overall, with enterprise being weaker and your optical business being stronger, kind of would expect pressure on gross margins there. Instead, you saw, you know, mix-driven strength. I wonder if you can give us any more details, maybe, you know, within the carrier business, or, you know, should we assume that's just more maybe capacity, line cards, less chassis that's driving that within optical, or what might be the dynamics that drove the strength in gross margins in Q2? And that's it for me.
Let's high level. I think we tried to mention, you know, some of the gross margins. I mean, the weaker dollar helps us, right? It hurts our revenue dollars, but it definitely helps our ability to drive gross margin, and also it can support profitability slightly. Remember, we have we're almost like self-hedged, but from a gross margin perspective, you are buying in dollars and selling heavily in other currencies, it can help you when the dollar's weakening as it is. So I think there's that one trend. Then there's product mix that we talked about. Some good stuff coming in from Q1 into Q2, which was good. Product mix helped our margin composition. From a customer mix, that was more pressure on the margins than support. But I think high level, Q1 was just extraordinarily bad. A lot of bad things came together to give us very low margins. Q2 was more normalized. Moving to Q3, you know, we have the telco exposure, and there's less gross margin in some of those large accounts, 0.1. But we have the issue around the dollar that's helping us some, so that should compensate some for that. We also have good cost reduction program this year on certain pieces that we designed to innovation. So I think there's a number of moving parts. Tendency would be probably, you know, slightly lower moving into Q3, but we're working on that as we speak. So let's see how that dollar rate impacts us and some of the planning and cost reductions impact us. But what I will say is I wouldn't expect increased margins. I would expect, you know, slightly lower margins if we're really supplemented by dollar and some other areas. Maybe we can be flattish as we grow into Q3. That would be my gut feeling. Uli, would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, and probably one thing that will also help us in Q3 is we saw a lot of, increased freight cost in Q1 and also early Q2, and this seems to be ease out a little bit. I guess in Q1 and beginning of Q2, we saw freight cost, you know, up to 4 times higher than usual, and now we're going back to normal. So this will definitely also help our gross margin on top of what Brian just said. But again, I would not assume that our margins will increase. Flattish or slightly down is probably more realistic. And again, if you remember what I said about the 50 million orders that shifted from Q2 into Q3, this is also rather lower margin business, so this will also have an impact.
Understood. Thanks very much.
And the next question we received is from Paul de Froment of Kepler Cheuvreux. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Paul de Froment, thank you for taking my question. I know that you partially already answered to that, but My question was on the cloud access segment. Could you give us your view on the evolution of the cloud access segment in this crisis? Could it be possible to see an improvement of this segment despite COVID-19? And finally, what's your feedback coming from large companies regarding their orders in H2? Could they improve?
So the first one was, or the first one I'll answer is the large customer issues. As indicated, some of the large carriers, it's mixed. From the large enterprises, it's harder to get information from the large enterprises because it's a small, usually small part of their spending, and you know it's just not as sophisticated, not as focused on that spend relative to their bigger spend. So our general information would be enterprises, we hope, you know, that there's not too much of a slowdown as indicated, and it comes back strong into next year, and the carrier is a bunch of moving parts. And on the edge cloud, the access piece coming back, you know, we've introduced a number of new products, aggregation products and virtualization product-based products. So we've introduced a lot of products. So yes, that stuff can come back if we're able to win footprint with our new products. And as the labs open back up, we're able to compete for new footprint and hopefully win new footprint. And therefore, we can grow. I think from a competitive landscape, we're doing well. We have some really interesting products, but we got to implement and win the business. So it's too early to tell you that we're going to turn that around, that access piece, and grow it, you know, in the second half or even the beginning of next year. But we're fighting with very many new interesting products with a number of new footprint opportunities.
Okay, thank you. Very clear.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad.
I think we've exceeded the 1 hour. So just last question, if there's anything out there.
So, but we received no further questions, so I hand back to you.
I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time. Clearly, interesting times for all of us, and I think we've all adapted to the change fairly successfully. Knock on wood, I hope you all stay healthy, as Uli has already said, and we're doing everything we can to protect anybody who's associated with ADFA. At the same time, we're running a business, which is critical, and I think our people are totally on board with that. Be safe, focus on business, continue to evolve ADFA. I think there's a lot of motivation and a lot of opportunity for us out there. We will go make it happen. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.